could save you 15%.
It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for Feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth, and today is our Federal Manager Association show. We do at least one or two of these shows a year. We have veterans with us in our studio, but I do believe that FMA's Federal Manager Association, we're going to refer to the association for the rest of the hour as FMA, as everybody knows them, but I do believe that this could be your president's maiden voyage onto our onto Fed Talk, and I want to welcome Patricia Niehaus, who is the president of FMA. Patricia, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us, Deborah.
And am I right, Patricia, that this is your maiden voyage onto Fed Talk?
Yes, it is.
Well, welcome to our show, and I think our listeners can figure out that Pat is joining us by telephone. It really doesn't make a difference. And we have a lot of the talent from FMA with us. We obviously have their president, Pat Niehaus, with us. And we have Todd Wells with us, who's a veteran of our show, the executive director of FMA. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning. Thanks for having us here.
And of course, we have, everybody has her. Everybody and everybody has Jessie Clement on. She's their you're their legislative affairs. What's your title?
Government affairs director, specifically. Oh, but you call it whatever you want.
Right. And everybody on Federal News Radio tries to get Jessie on. Jessie is really, for federal employee and federal manager legislative issues, everybody knows Jessie. No one can explain these issues like Jessie, except maybe Jenny Matling from my office. Jenny, if you're listening, there's the shout out. So anyway, so this is our FMA show, and the reason why we do the show at this time of year is because we like to preview FMA's national conference, which is going to be held in March, and we have a couple of guests joining us later in the hour who will be presenting at the conference, and will give a little preview of the conference. But for those people who don't know very much about FMA, Pat, I thought maybe your maiden voyage, you could tell us about your organization. And I want to congratulate you, Pat, on being the first female president of FMA.
Thank you. FMA is an association of federal managers across the government, across the country. We also have a chapter in Europe and the Pacific. And we advocate excellence in government service through our advocacy, which Jessie is the head of that and does a fabulous job for us. Our association is very blessed. We have five very talented staff members there in Alexandria. So they take care of our day-to-day business for us and do an excellent job of it. But we are approaching our 100th year. So at this convention, it'll be our 98th year.
It's amazing.
Yeah, we are the oldest management association in the federal government. And
you know, Pat, I think I do the show, or I feel like I've done the show every year, or the FMA show to promote the conference. I feel like I have. And I must tell you that every time I get ready and I read up about FMA, you know, just on the website, why am I always consistently surprised to remember that, that your organization is the oldest, and not by just like a little, 1913.
Yes.
Yes. We started out, at the Navy shipyard there in Washington as an association of Navy supervisors. And 60% of our membership is still within DOD, but we have branched out all over the federal government, including a new chapter recently formed in the TSA.
Oh, that's an interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, that's an interesting agency to be. But, of course, you know, DOD, I think, still remains the largest department of, you know, where civilian workforce resides.
Yes,
in the federal
is.
Government, so it makes sense that you would have, you know, so much of your membership would derive from DOD. But tell us about what the association does for its members, and not just directly for its members, but clearly for managers and supervisors throughout the government.
Most of our work in D.C. is legislative in nature. Jesse can tell you about the various bills that she and our legislative specialist, Carl Gruth, I do that to the two of them all the time.
That's fine.
But she can tell you about that. Todd oversees the whole staff there. But our legislative action is based on issues that pertain to the federal manager and frequently to the federal employee, too, but we focus on our membership there.
And for those people who are listening who might not be a member of FMA and are interested in possibly joining, who can join your organization?
Any manager in the federal government, retired or active.
Any aspiring manager as well. We do have an associate membership for aspiring managers. You know, when they come to the government, look at their career path, if they know management is a likely scenario for them, we also welcome their membership.
And of course, Pat, people become members of FMA the way everyone else in the world now does anything. You can do it on the World Wide Web, right?
Absolutely. FedManagers.org.
FedManagers.org, and I imagine you have a please join or a join page.
Look at the top of the page. Join now, and we're glad to have you.
And for those people who are listening, you know, one of the things that always concerns federal employees is the cost of joining these associations. And for many people, federal employees, non-federal employees, people feel they benefit from advocacy associations that cover their profession or their interest, and they don't feel they know the organization exists. They count on somebody else to make the contribution. You know, to keep it alive. But, you know, I think that for most and for every federal employee and manager association that I'm aware of, the membership dues are enormously reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
And Todd, what are theirs to join?
It's $93 for a regular member, $47 for a retiree. So there's really no reason why a federal manager should not be a member of FMA. And we encourage everyone out there listening right now to run to your computer and get onto www.fedmanagers.org.
You know, and for $93, you know, the problem is that people think it's not just federal employees. They think that, you know, for example, lawyers who are members of bar associations, voluntary bar associations, many lawyers feel, well, I don't need to join. It's a voluntary bar association because it's always going to be there and somebody else is going to pay the way. But, you know, in all times, but particularly in this time where there's clearly going to be a refocus, a restructure, a new vision for the federal government, the executive branch. I'm not sure the congressional branch is going to include themselves in it. You want your associations like FMA at least advocating for your interest. And for $93 to have a staff that FMA has, you know, it's a very talented staff.
Yes, we are very blessed.
You know, it's very talented, but it costs money. And, you know, I encourage people to go to the website and consider joining. But of course, you know, one of the things that FMA does really well is their national convention, which I told our listeners we'll be talking about later on in the show. And Pat, am I right that anyone can attend the convention? You don't have to be a member?
Yes, you are right. We also have a registration link on our website, particularly for our training day. People can come just for our training day, which, as you said, will be talked about later. And we have some phenomenal presenters that Todd has lined up for this year.
Yeah, no, every year it's really a very interesting and timely. There's like you're right on the hot buttons, what's going on in the government. But for those people who might not necessarily be ready to put $93 down on joining the association, Pat, they certainly could come for the training to the convention, see if they feel they connect with the group and it's a valuable investment, and then sort of decide from there.
Just to butt in here, absolutely. The training day only is available to anyone, like you said, across government who's interested in management. And it's only $450 for the day. And that includes, you know, breakfast, lunch, an evening get-together, and on top of that, 1 year of membership in FMA. So it's a good way to have a trial year. It's not going to cost you any more. And that way you get to get our magazine, our newsletter that comes biweekly. and any other benefit, so you can see for yourself.
Yeah, and one of the benefits I should mention is that my law firm offers to your association members, we offer 2 free half-hour consultations on any legal matter. So for the cost of the training day, or if you want to join, that $93 gets you a lot. But, you know, most importantly, it's really about, I think, joining a group that can advocate your interests, and particularly in these kinds of times, these groups really make a difference in your day-to-day, you know, work life. Pat, hold on there, because I know we have more we want to talk to you about, but we do need to take our first break. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, Radio 1500 AM.
Hello, my federal friends. It's the Geico Gecko, and I've got good news for you. I might even say it's some of the best news ever. Okay, well, definitely in the top 3. The big news. Geico now offers discounts for most federal employees GS7 or above, which is no doubt a lot of you out there. So you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, all with a company that began over 70 years ago with the sole purpose of serving government employees like yourself. Yeah, that's right. Geico, the government employees insurance company. And today, well, we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. And did you know about Geico's 97% customer satisfaction rate? Well, saving money tends to make people rather happy, I think. So congrats again to those federal employees GS7 or above. Welcome to the Savings Club. Mike?
Got it. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. The Gecko's right. Discounts are available for most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth. I'm hosting our annual Federal Manager Association show to preview their national convention, which is going to be held in March. And we have FMA's national president on the phone with us this morning, Pat Niehaus. Pat, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having us. We appreciate you doing this.
And, of course, as I've said before in our studio, we have FMA's executive director, Todd Wells, and we have Jesse Clement, who's their director of governmental affairs. I got it right, Jesse?
Close enough.
And we're certainly going to spend the next 10 or 12 minutes now talking about the advocacy that FMA, as one of many, or several, many's probably an overstatement, several manager, federal manager associations across the government are now engaged in. And I always feel like Jesse's right in the middle of every issue.
And we feel the same way.
That's what we count on her for.
She is. And no one can explain it better than Jesse, except for ours, Jenny Matling. So Jesse, people want to know what's going on the Hill and how it's going to affect them. So if you were to order in priorities, what's up there and what FMA is interested in, what's number one?
Well, after that intro, I hope I can live up to the hype. There's 2 schools of thoughts here, Deborah. When FMA was drafting its issue briefs, we wanted to focus on good government issues. That's our priority. That's our mission.
Says it in your mission statement.
That's our agenda. So when we were deciding what issues we want to proactively pursue on Capitol Hill, we kept that in mind. And the top of our legislative agenda in terms of issues that only affect managers is the managerial training piece. We do believe it is vitally important for managers to receive training on a regular, scheduled, consistent basis. But when it comes to where our attention is going to be focused next year, I really do think all of our groups are going to be paying attention to the current attacks on federal employees.
When you say next year, you mean
this year. I'm sorry.
2011, right?
I keep doing that. I keep forgetting that we're in the 112th Congress. We're moving forward.
It's February.
Yes, it is. I keep thinking it's December. It is February.
It's February.
We spend a lot of time up on the Hill. FMA is a member of the Government Managers Coalition with 4 other management groups. We had our annual lobbying day earlier this week. As a coalition, we went up to the Hill on Tuesday.
And how are you all received?
Depends on the office. We met with a lot of new members, so it was a great way to educate them on our issues and our individual associations. For some of the more seasoned members of Congress and their staff, they were very open about the battles we are going to be facing on the Hill this year when it comes to benefit cuts, salary freezes, across-the-board workforce cuts. So when FMA was crafting its agenda, we still kept the proactive good government initiatives in mind, but we know that this year our focus will probably be elsewhere.
And to list the items that Congress is now considering in terms of benefit cuts, budget cuts. What's the word?
Well, a couple of days ago, the Appropriations Committee put out its proposed cuts for the remainder of FY11. They're supposed to be debating the CR next week.
I heard the president's put out that he wants to stick to 2010 levels. And I know, I've heard, right, the Congress has been saying they want to go back to 28 levels.
2008 levels, correct. The Appropriations put out a large amount of cuts, somewhere upwards of $70 billion, when you compare it to the president's budget. When they were campaigning, however, many new members of Congress campaigned on that $100 billion in cuts promise. So despite the fact that the Appropriations Committee put forth over $70 billion in cuts for the remainder of FY11, the Tea Partiers didn't feel that was enough. So now Appropriations is going back. They are going to try and meet that $100 billion mark, and they're going to reveal a new cuts plan for next year. The one that was revealed earlier this week, just listed by agency, you know, this agency is getting less, this agency is getting this much less. One of the really telling things, though, is like, for instance, the National Institutes of Health. Under the plan put out by House appropriators, they were to receive $100 billion less in funding. But that's compared to the president's budget, not compared to FY11 levels. So that $1 billion in cuts actually would have kept NIH at fiscal year 10 levels for fiscal year 11. So it's all in how you word this, how you think about these cuts. When you look at what they proposed in terms of FY10 levels, it was a decrease of about $34 billion. I think it was $32 billion, somewhere in there.
Billion.
Mm-hmm. So they're taking a hard line at these issues. Yeah. When it comes to FY12 funding, which they'll start to consider soon after they finish with the remainder of FY11.
If they ever really reach the agreement.
They will. But you know, they will. We saw that play out, you know, we saw that play out in the early 90s with the Clinton administration.
And I think no one wants a repeat of being responsible for shutting down the government. It's obvious to every American. It's just the posturing. They're going to reach an agreement. Mm-hmm. And there will be cuts. My view, not that anybody asked, but just because I like to get it out there, and I get to, because, you know, I'm hosting a radio show. My view is I am shocked that, as a business owner, I am shocked that both branches of government are so late to the table, the executive branch and the appropriators, because in 2008 and 2009, all of America, small business, big business, medium business, everybody did this, mm-hmm. 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so I'm always intrigued by the federal employee reaction. Are they aware of how many tens of millions of Americans lost their jobs through budget cuts in corporate America and small businesses? So the American public clearly feels like it should happen. And I would imagine your organization appreciates that. And you're not saying no. Mm-hmm. It's what's the mess? What is FMA, like all the other associations and groups, not the unions? How do you maneuver? What's the plan to maneuver through what's going to feel like a change, a sea change in how government runs itself?
Our approach has been that we believe that government can run more efficiently and more effectively. There are things that federal managers and their employees alike can do to make their agency run more efficiently. And we feel that just
corporate America had to revisit that.
Everybody, I mean, that's the same for all businesses. It's not, you know, just the federal government. Everybody knows ways where you can save your organization, your company, your business money. So we take the approach of course, there are ways the federal government can save money. But when you say a 10% cut for all agencies except for DOD or a 15% cut for all agencies,
it seems very random.
Except for DOD, DHS, and VA, that's not a good way of doing business, especially when it comes to the customer service driven agencies, because the biggest line item in their budget is staff. And when you take a small agency like the Social Security Administration,
yeah, it's all customer service,
and give it a 15% cut, they have no other choice but to cut staff, because that's where the bulk of their money is spent. And then you're negatively impact the constituents that you were elected to serve, because they're going to call up their local Social Security office and they're going to be on hold for hours instead of 15 minutes because they got rid of the person. They got rid of one of the two people that answered that phone call. So, and when we talk about these cuts, a measured, methodical approach is much preferable to saying an across the board X percentage cut for every agency except DOD.
But they're talking about cutting DOD, are they not?
Everybody talks about it. DOD has identified ways where they can run more efficiently.
Yeah, Gates got out in front of that.
Gates did get out in front of it. Of course, we have FMA have members represented it in the very areas he wants to cut. So that is a concern of ours. But he did get out in front of it. But cutting defense spending doesn't sell at home. It's not going to sell in your local newspaper. No one's going to go on TV and say, I want to cut the defense budget by $100 billion. You know, that's not going to sell with their constituents.
So do we think we're getting just across the board cuts, or do we think it's going to be a thoughtful approach looking at specific programs in each agency, which, you know, the federal executive branch is so huge to be able to really grasp what every agency does down into its, you know, into the hallways of every building where they're at. I think that's, I don't know how the government gets a handle on that, but that's sort of the approach you're talking about, Jesse. How do you see it doing across the, you see it a combination?
I see at least for fiscal year 11, at least what the House appropriators have put out thus far, they are picking and choosing the agencies where they want to see a decrease in spending, and defense was absolutely left off that list. What happens with fiscal year 2012, though, gets a little trickier. The Spending Reduction Act, which was introduced by the Republican Study Committee a few weeks ago, advocated a 15% cut across the board, a return to FY 2008 levels for the remainder of FY 11, and then a return to FY 2006 levels for fiscal year 2012 through fiscal year 2021. So, I mean, if that's the approach they decide to take, then you're looking at across-the-board cuts for everybody. What they're doing, at least for FY 11, is picking the agencies where they want to see some money saved. So it's really anyone's guess at this point in time what measure they use. But I do believe, regardless of the agency you work at, you're looking at cuts for next year.
And that's cuts in funding and programs. What about federal employee benefits? You said that was one of the things you heard when you went up on, what was it?
Tuesday.
On Tuesday.
Right now, there are two bills out there that would extend the pay freeze. One would extend the pay freeze for a total of 3 years, and one would extend it for five. So that is it's an immediate way for the federal government to save money. It makes for an excellent soundbite, but it doesn't take into consideration, you know, broader economic implications. When you freeze the pay of 2 million people who then see increases in their health insurance every single year, sometimes to the tune of double digits, those folks are taking home less pay year after year after year. That's not necessarily going to aid in our economic recovery. So while it makes for an excellent soundbite on the local news, it's not sound policy to continue to deny feds a pay raise arbitrarily.
You think just picking the number of 5 years is arbitrary?
I do believe it's arbitrary, yes, because it's an easy way to save money, and it sells. It sells with constituents.
Yeah. So at a minimum, you think we're hearing 3 years of pay raise, 2011, 12, and 13?
Well, currently they're under a 2-year pay freeze. So they didn't get a raise in 2011, and right now they won't get a pay freeze in 2012. FMA's other top legislative agenda item for the year is making sure that freeze is not extended any further.
For the 2 years?
Beyond the two years.
And I think that, like most things that have these, there's sunset provisions. So it's 5 years. It's a sunset provision. I think I got that right. You know, you can count on Congress playing with it depending upon the state of the economy and what party's in control of what house of Congress and the White House. So even if it's said, okay, for 5 years, a lot of that's driven by the state of the economy 2 or 3 years from now. And certainly what party is in power. And you say the federal workforce is 2 million, but I think Congress's plan is to get it decreased down.
Well, it's the plan of certain members of Congress, yes. To decrease the size of the federal workforce.
Certainly shrink the size of the federal workforce.
Which, as history has shown us, which you mentioned earlier, you know, we've had a government shutdown in the past. We've had across-the-board cuts of the federal workforce. And what history shows us is when you cut the federal workforce, you increase your contracting roles. The moment you cut a federal employee, that job doesn't disappear. Somebody still needs to do that job. And what we found in the 90s, when Clinton cut almost 400,000, mostly mid-level managers, is that the contracting costs skyrocketed because somebody still needed to do that job. And when we talk about our contracting workforce, that's not included in that 2 million people.
Yeah. And of course, the whole contracting out, you know, we saw that earlier in 2010, some, you know, deeper looks into what are we really sending out? How is it really saving us money? And so there was already a belief that contracting out was not cost effective. It really was more costly than putting a Fed into the job. This is going to be very interesting times. You know, Jesse, you're always welcome back to tell us where things are. Because like I said, no one knows these issues better than Jesse Clement. But listen, we do need to take our mid-show break. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
It's the Geico Gecko, and I've got good news for you. I might even say it's some of the best news ever. Okay, well, definitely in the top three. The big news. Geico now offers discounts for most federal employees GS7 or above, which is no doubt a lot of you out there. So you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, all with a company that began over 70 years ago with the sole purpose of serving government employees like yourself. Yeah, that's right. Geico, the government employees insurance company. And today, well, we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. And did you know about Geico's 97% customer satisfaction rate? Well, saving money tends to make people rather happy, I think. So congrats again to those federal employees GS7 or above. Welcome to the Savings Club. Mike?
Got it. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. The Gecko's right. Discounts are available for most federal employees GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
I'm Bill Bransford, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Fed Talk brings you inside information on hot topics in the federal community. From the halls of Congress to federal agencies, get the latest on the laws, regulations, and activities that directly impact federal employees. Tune into Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, as we bring in the experts to bring you inside the issues.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth, and I'm hosting today's show. With us today is the Federal Managers Association. We're doing our annual Fed Talk show to promote both FMA and their national convention, which is going to be held this year in the D.C. area in March. And we just spent the last 15 minutes about talking with Jesse Clement, their Director of Governmental Affairs. But you think I got your name wrong and title wrong. And she gave us a taste of what their legislative agenda is. We're certainly going to circle back with Jesse later in the show. But now we want to spend some time talking with Todd and some of our call-in guests about the convention. And so, Todd, what's your 73rd National Convention?
73rd National Convention and Management Training Seminar. We were founded in 1913, but we apparently didn't start our national conventions right off the bat. Our theme this year is Federal Managers Turning Policy into Action, which we thought was accurate and timely, and it's a challenge for our folks, obviously. So the dates of the convention are March 14th through the 16th, and it will take place at the Doubletree Hotel in Crystal City, Arlington, Virginia. That's the hotel right across from the Pentagon. So for anyone who's interested in coming to our training day, the Pentagon City Metro is right there and makes for an easy day across the river if you're working in D.C. or in the area. So,
and for those people who are listening or interested in possibly attending the convention, you can go to the website. Can you register now?
You can register, absolutely, and you can get more details as well. It's www.fedmanagers.org. That's F-E-D managers with an S. org.
And you mentioned, Todd, that one of your days is devoted, it's called Training Day.
That's correct.
What is that?
Training Day is simply that. It's trying to get our folks information that's, you know, sometimes confusing or new laws come into being, and we're just trying to make sure that they're on top of the game and have access to the people that know the best and hopefully can explain it to them direct from the source. And this year we've been lucky because we've been able to get five speakers, that four of which come from government directly. And then, of course, we'll be hearing from Bill Bransford here soon.
That's a great introduction to Bill. And we have two of your two of your six trainers. What did you say? Five trainers.
Five trainers.
Two of your five trainers are actually joining us in today's show. And this is like the oddest thing for me because I believe we have my law partner on the line. Bill, are you with us?
I am.
And so this is a lot of fun for me. I get to interview Bill.
It's great to be a guest on Fed Talk.
I know, is it right? Because he's been hosting it for like 15 years. So Bill's joining us to let us know about the session he's putting on. And Bill, is this your first time doing Training Day at FMA?
No, I've done training there before. I don't do it every year, but I think maybe like every 3 or 4 years I'm invited.
They invite you back?
They invite me back, and I've been invited. FMA used to have a mid-year conference. I'm not sure that's happened the last few years, but I've also been to that. So this is the first time I've done this topic, though, which is the name of the topic is The Future of Supervisory Training 101. And so that's kind of interesting because this is supervisory training all day long, and then I'm going to be talking about what is supervisory training going to be in the future in the federal government as a whole, because it really is sporadic, inconsistent, sometimes ineffective, and we need to do a better job.
And haven't we all been saying that, Bill, for like I've been practicing law for 21 years, and I feel like they've been saying it, Bill, for 20 years.
Well, probably a little less than that, because actually back until the early 1990s, OPM had a requirement that when you became a new supervisor, you had to have a 40-hour supervisory training program, new supervisory training. And it was pretty much required, and it was run by OPM. It was real good training. You know, some of the basics, you know, leave management, performance management, conduct issues. New supervisors used to go through that pretty much with regularity. And then in the mid-90s, OPM deregulated, and now agencies are all over the place.
Yeah. So what do you, give us a preview of what you think you're going to be telling people. I mean, particularly, I don't know if you were listening to Jesse, but you obviously know Bill's general counsel, everybody knows, to Senior Executive Association, so, you know.
I was not able to listen to Jesse.
Right, well, but you do.
It's unfortunate, Bill, because we don't get to talk very often.
But I do know what Jesse usually says about legislation.
Right, and of course, you know, as part of the work you do, and everybody knows in this town, the big talk in this town about incoming budget cuts. So when you look at the numbers, Bill, of how deep the cuts are going to be, and regardless of how politicians want to describe what the government should be doing or not, it's a huge population, 300 million Americans. There's a lot of involvement the government has in our lives. It costs money to have that involvement. When they start making cuts, you know, you and I, Bill, we've talked about it. The obvious cut is the easy stuff, training.
So training and travel.
Training and travel. So what do you?
Well, I think that's a reality. I think it's a big problem, and I think it's extraordinarily short-sighted. The military doesn't cut training. Their leaders are trained. You know, when they first come on board to be, when you're a new officer, you get 3 months of training. And 7 or 8 years later, you get another 6 months, and then 7 or 8 years later, you get a year. But the federal government doesn't do anything comparable, and so it's extremely short-sighted. And even though the Congressional Budget Office has scored the managers' training legislation that's been introduced the last few Congresses, in which FMA supports, the Senior Executives Association supports, the Government Managers Coalition, which both groups are a part of, supports. Even though, you know, there's a cost associated with it, which is right now making it politically unpalatable.
Yeah.
I think in the long run, there's a tremendous savings in reduced EEO complaints and successful, you know, adverse actions that don't get appealed to the MSPB, where you don't have to pay back pay and attorney's fees. I think there's a cost savings that CBO doesn't want to look at. It makes the government better as a whole, and it also improves the stature of civil servants, because I think when you have good managers managing, and they produce better results, and the public benefits.
Yeah, and you know, it's sort of the unspoken assumption that somebody who becomes a manager must know how to manage. And when you look at the private sector, where people are hired in as management, many of them have management backgrounds. You know, they have degrees in management, or they have coursework in management. You don't just become a manager, but that seems to be the federal model.
Or in the private sector, they develop their managers. They assess their managerial skills, whether they have innate managerial skills or whether they can possibly be developed or cultivated. In the federal government, there is none of that.
Yeah.
There is a culture of once you, you know, you're the best worker and you become the best technician, and you're really, you know, everyone likes you because you're enthusiastic and you come to work every day, and your manager feels like I really need to reward John. I need to pay him more, and the only way to pay them more is to promote them into the next grade level, which requires supervisory responsibilities, and then there's no training, and then John may or may not be suited for supervisory duties, and we need to look. I think the government should also look at its pay structure and reward those super technicians who may not be good managers with something else. Develop the people who have managerial skills at an earlier point in their career, and then train managers. And it isn't just training them once as a new manager, but mm-hmm. it's every few years, refresh your skills and the latest things. I mean, right now there's, for example, there's the Americans Disabilities Amendments Act, which passed a few years ago. EEOC is about to issue regulations, extraordinary new rules in the federal workplace about accommodating people with disabilities. And most managers don't have a clue. The result is successful discrimination complaints, but more important, a failure to follow the law.
Yeah, and what you just said, sort of, you know, I get two thoughts on that. One is that in any workplace, big or small, medium-sized workplaces, if it's well managed, you have high morale,
mm-hmm.
and high morale, happy workers, very productive.
And they don't file complaints.
And that's the second thing. In the federal government, this other underlying assumption, which no one wants to, really deal with, is in the federal workplace, there are legal avenues. If you're unhappy with your manager, if you don't think they're managing well, you know, everybody runs into, usually they run into the EO forum, or if it's a bargaining unit, you know, you get unfair labor practices. But in the private sector, you know, unhappy workers don't really have many legal rights, if any at all. And so they're not running into these alternative legal processes where they can detract and take, you know, the amount of time you suck out of a supervisor's day when they have to respond to an EEO complaint where it wasn't EEO discrimination, but maybe it was bad management, really detracts.
Well, I hate to admit that there are bad managers, but there are.
Well, I don't mean
if they are, they should come to our training day to learn how to become better.
It's inexperienced. Okay, I'm correcting myself. Inexperienced. And the value.
Inexperienced and untrained.
Right, and the value, because the federal workforce has so many laws and rules and regulations that govern how it's run, that it's unfair to put someone in management and expect them to just sort of intuitively get it right. And it can detract. And I think, I think we're all in agreement that's the benefit of training.
Yeah, I think it seems like the current system is management development by osmosis. And what I would like to see is management development with some sort of a strategic idea in mind, and it's going to be a real challenge. You know, when I talk to the managers at FMA, they're going to go back to their workplaces, and I'm going to talk to them about, you know, the developing their fellow managers, their subordinate managers, for people that are at the second and third level. They need to find a way to provide this training, because the reality is that the budgets are going to be cut. Right now, OPM does have training regulations that encourage management training. It doesn't require it, but at DOD, where many FMA members are, last year's Defense Authorization Act does require DOD to provide management training for its employees. So at least in that significant part of the workplace, there is required management training. And so,
and are they funding it?
As far as I know, they are. I don't know, Jesse. You probably would know that better than I. You're there on the front lines with your managers.
It is on my to-do list to follow up with some of the armed services staff. From what I've heard from our members, they don't seem to be receiving any additional training based on the new law, but they haven't communicated to me one way or the other.
Yeah, so I mean, there are things that are happening, and there are some agencies. The FAA, for example, has a management development institute that it's put together where all their managers, supervisors and managers, are put through training. So there are some agencies that are doing a great job. It's just in some places they're not, and I think it's really important now. When federal employees have become such a target in the media and by political figures, that managers do everything they can to provide the best leadership possible
mm-hmm.
In these very tough time. So the federal civil service of the future is a model, for all Americans to be proud of.
Yeah. Well, Bill, good luck next month on training day, convincing federal managers and supervisors about where training in the federal government's going to go. Without, I think it's on some level they feel they're swimming upstream.
We all feel that way.
Swimming upstream, but
we gotta keep swimming too.
Yeah, and thank you for being a guest on our show.
Well, it was wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay,
thanks, Bill.
And so, as you all know, it's a quarter of the hour. We do need to take the last break of our show. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
It's the Geico Gecko with a little hello to all you federal employees. Now, in government, there are people on all points of the political spectrum. But there is one thing that everyone agrees on. Saving money is good. Which brings me to the big news. GEICO now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. It don't matter if you're a Democrat or an aristocrat, left wing, right wing or a chicken wing. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, you could be saving a lot of money on your car insurance by switching to GEICO. So no matter if you're blue or red or in my case green. If you're a federal employee, GS7 or above, contact GEICO and see how much you could save. Isn't that right, Mike?
Exactly right, my little green friend. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. And like the Gecko said, discounts are available for most federal employees, GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth, and I'm hosting today's show with the Federal Managers Association, FMA, as their friends like to call them. And we have been talking about, earlier in the show, we talked about part of FMA's legislative agenda. Hopefully, in our last segment, we'll be able to get back with Jesse and learn some more. We talked to Bill Bransford, my law partner, about training day, and one of the topics that he will be presenting on at your national convention in March is training for supervisors. And Todd, you said that, is it Wednesday is training day for
Tuesday, March 15th.
Tuesday the 15th
right.
is training day, and that's the day that's open to non-FMA
members. That's correct. We would encourage any federal manager or supervisor to join us for that day, March 15th, at the DoubleTree Hotel in Crystal City in Arlington, across from the Pentagon. And the registration fee actually includes 1 year of membership in FMA, so it's a good way to get to know us better. Of course, a big part of any association is the camaraderie and the networking and the socializing that takes place in places, like a convention. And then also there's chapters across the country as well. So it's a great way, following up on what Bill was saying as far as managerial training for managers, to the best that we can, our members are people who have taken that extra step and want to better themselves and become better managers. They don't always get the assistance formally, but through our networking, mentorship, informal networks like that, they're people that are taking that extra step. So I think it's a good way for aspiring managers to get to know some folks that can be of use and help to them, certainly in the future.
Yeah,
so,
networking.
Absolutely.
And not on the social electronic network, like actually in person. We do have one of your other trainers who's going to be joining us in a minute to talk about the topic she's presenting on. But you said there are on training day, you have five different speakers presenting on different topics. And Bill told us one of them, which is training, the future of supervisory training.
Right.
It seems a little dismal, but hey, maybe he'll pull it out.
Our first presentation in the morning is Hiring Reform, What It Means to Managers. And we'll have Carmen Andujar of the Recruitment Policy and Outreach Office of the Office of Personnel Management address this subject. So, certainly something of great interest to any federal manager, since they're going to be playing a key role, and hopefully it will serve them well as well as serve their agencies well. The next speaker is going to be Wade Hanum of the General Services Administration, and he's going to address telework is here to stay, learn the skills necessary to effectively manage a telework workforce, as I'm sure you've heard before, that's a contentious topic, but there's an obvious need. Absolutely. Exactly.
They are hot and cold.
But now it's law. So
the point that we're trying to make is it's law. It's coming, whether you like it or not.
Nope.
So we've got to deal with it. And as far as we're concerned, we want our managers to be able to use it to their advantage as well as our agency's advantage.
Yeah.
And the final presentation of the day will be building successful collaborative relationships to effectuate change and improve organizational performance. That's quite a mouthful.
I was about to say that's
a mouthful. It's an important topic always, but what we'll have Michael Wolf of the Collaboration and Dispute Resolutions Office of the Federal Labor Relations Authority offering tips on how managers can make things run as smoothly as possible, inviting the right people in at the right times and keeping everyone abreast of what's going on to alleviate any problems that could happen. So those are the other topics. And then we have Dr. Zena Such that I know we'll be hearing from in just a second. Thank you very much, Dr. Such. Her topic is...
Todd can have his own radio show.
He really could.
Her topic is effective communication, how to be heard by superiors with credibility. And she comes to us from the USDA's virtual university. So I'm excited to hear from her directly.
Dr. Such, are you with us?
I am. Thank you for having me, Deborah.
And thank you for coming on Fed Talk. Is this your first time being with us?
Yes, it is.
And virtual, USDA Virtual University. Okay, just to date myself, Dr. Such, let me just tell you, to date myself, I know the USDA grad school, which I'm not even sure exists anymore. Remember, it was like an actual building?
Yes, and you are right. It doesn't exist as a USDA grad school. It's separate now, and they call themselves the graduate school, and they are not connected with or affiliated with USDA.
So what is the USDA Virtual University, and can you preview for us the topic that you will be speaking on at FMA's convention in just about a month?
Sure. The Virtual University was really developed, the concept was developed last spring, 2010,
mm-hmm.
and basically a working group was tasked with developing actions that would address USDA's low scores on the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey.
Oh.
And they also held some listening sessions with the secretary and folks from the secretary's office. And from that feedback, what they learned was that we needed to create a more effective way of providing supervisory, managerial, executive training across USDA in a way that wasn't left up to the agencies to determine, but in a more effective way, in an efficient way, less costly way. And right now we have a provost, and she's also the Deputy Chief Human Capital Officer, Dr. Carlise Kelly. And then I was hired as the USDA Chief Training Officer, but also as the Deputy Provost to help support this this new university.
And I don't know if you were able to listen to our last segment with Bill Bransford, who was talking about the future, what to, you know, forecast, what is the future of training. This is exactly what you're talking about, sounds to me to be the exact response to what Bill was saying, is that it lacks, after OPM got out of the business of running managerial supervisory training government-wide, it lacked a cohesive vision and plan. And the result was it was ad hoc and ineffective. It sounds like USDA might be out in the front.
Well, we hope to be. Currently, you know, USDA mission areas and staff, they were providing training for all of their staff, whether it was technical or leadership type of training or skills-building training. And what we're trying to do is employ the entire university and gather all of that skill in developing training programs, in implementing these training programs, bring them together so that we could work collaboratively, so that it's not left up to each mission area to mm-hmm. work independently. And we feel that that way we tap into the resources that we have, the expertise that we have, and bring it all together under one roof.
So one cloud,
one virtual.
Okay,
cloud, right?
Don't I sound like I'm talking the talk? I don't even know what that means, but I guess it's a cloud. But is the virtual university up and running?
Currently, it is. We are looking to get a few more additional staff to help support it. We've got three sections of the university that we've already developed mm-hmm. in concept. And the first one really focuses on the Academy for Interns and Scholars, and that's bringing new people on board and their experiences and what kind of training can we provide those folks. And then the second one is the School of Talent Management for all USDA employees. And that really will be a lot of distance learning-based, some career track learning programs. We will be holding webinars. We also have a learning management system that provides online courses that are really pretty fantastic, and we are going to be incorporating those courses into career track learning programs So that would comprise that School of Talent Management. And then the third piece would be the College of Leadership and Professional Development, which would look at our executive level trainings like our Senior Executive mm-hmm. Service and Business Management Leaders Programs and Presidential Management Fellows Programs.
And that's really, I guess that's the piece that I think FMA is trying to bring into its convention. And as I understand, you're billed on the convention's website as presenting on effective communication, how to be heard by superiors with credibility.
Correct.
Give us a preview of what that's about.
Well, what we hope to do there is to bring to the consciousness of those who are in leadership roles to recognize the importance of not only oral communication but written communication. And some of the components of this presentation will focus on taking a look at who your audience is mm-hmm. and being able to really determine what is of importance to those people that you are speaking to. And then to be able to develop your proposal or your purpose or your content for your communication in a way that hits upon those areas that are of importance. And one of the things that we talk about is the planning piece of that. How do you plan for the communication? The third component would really be about the listening piece, because to be an effective communicator, to be able to really get your message across, you need to be a good listener and learn what exactly people are looking for. And if you can determine this through being an active listener and participatory listener, then you can better communicate your message.
And I take it from the title of your course that is there some sort of concern that managers, supervisors, mid-level are having difficulty communicating above with credibility?
I'm not sure if I would say that. I think that at all levels, people are trying to communicate, and sometimes what we forget is that what is important to us in our day-to-day management of a project or a program it may not be the only thing that your superior is looking at when trying to provide support for you. So I think what we're trying to do is expand that circle of knowledge, so to speak, to engage that manager into thinking in the big picture more. And if we can kind of open that up to them so that they realize that what they think is, you know, vital and critical, important to their program, to their project, they have to also consider what's vital, critical, and important to their superiors.
Well, it really, it's very interesting, which is why you have a PhD. It sounds very interesting. We're really glad that you were able and fortunate that you were able to join us. And I wish the virtual university all the luck. I think it's the way of the future, and I think it really responds to some of those issue problems that Bill Bransford was just talking about, the problem with training managers in the government. So best of luck to you, Dr. Such. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Deborah.
Okay, Jesse, we have a minute. A minute. Go for it. Tell us what's left on, because I know your members are listening. They want to know what's left on your legislative agenda. You have 1 minute.
I have 1 minute. Wow. Talk about a lot of pressure. Now I just wasted about 10 seconds. FMA has a process that it uses to compile its legislative agenda every year. Its legislative staff puts together what we think will be the most important issues. We do so about mid-December, and then we send it out to our membership for comment. They get back to us, we incorporate their comments, and then we send out another draft. Our members currently have 1 week left to comment on that second draft. Right now, we're looking at about 13 different issues that we're going to focus our efforts on in 2011. Seven of them are management specific. They're issues you probably won't see on, say, the union's legislative agenda. These are ones that do focus on managers and supervisors. And then our second brief is federal workforce-wide issues, ones where you'll find that other groups are advocating for as well. And we've had a lot of success joining forces with the other federal employee organizations to put together our agenda. We have supervisory training. We have don't extend the pay freeze, which I talked about earlier. We have the ones you see every year, repeal, GPO, and WEP. So we'll have that done in the next few weeks.
And we'll send everybody your website. I'm sure you'll update it. And mm-hmm. It's the end of our show. If you're interested in going to the convention, go to FMA's website. Thank you so much, Todd Wells, Jesse Clement. Thank you for joining us in our studio today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Deborah.